podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Autumn is in the air and Manscaped is here to ensure that you don't carve your pumpkins when you're grooming. By pumpkins, we actually mean your boys. Yeah, Stephen and the twins. In fact, Manscaped is on a mission to change the way that you approach caring for your balls. And great news, they've just released their products in the UK, Canada and Australia. Now, let's not forget, it's the best...
We're not bothered about the Australians having an eye.
Are you not?
No?
No. Well, neither am I, actually.
They can chuff off.
The Lawnmower 3.0 Trimmer offers a replaceable ceramic blade with advanced skin-safe technology, which helps reduce grooming accidents. Lads, have you ever had a grooming accident? And be completely honest.
Only the odd nip and a little bit of needless blood for a bit, but nothing like ridiculous. No sort of horrific Halloween horror film scenes, mate. And I'm too scared to
go too deep.
Yeah, so... I am actually due a little bit of a tidy up down there, so I'm looking forward to using my as previously used Manscaped equipment.
Fantastic. Yeah. And Chris, are you...
I would second what Brooksy said. I don't think anyone can lie if they do look after themselves and say they've never had a little accident.
Yeah.
But due to having the new Manscaped product means I will never have an accident again.
I love it. Well, look, they've got an ear and nose hair trimmer as well. It's called the Weed Whacker. They've got the Crop Care Kit. We like that, by the way. I've used that ball deodorant. It's brilliant. Really, really nice. I don't know. I don't really know why, but it feels nice and fresh down there. It's very good. Crop Mop Ball Wipes, Crop Cleanser Body Wash, a full body wash that you can also use on your hair, on your head. Not that I've got much of it, so mine will probably last me a while.
Be careful, mate. Be careful.
I just thought I'd get that in before you guys started as well. And if you've suffered from stank foot or you stand on your feet all day, there's a product for you, the Foot Duster Foot Deodorant. It's a free gift as well when you order this. So that's pretty good. Loads of stuff to go at as well. The reason that we're kind of mentioning this to you is because we've got a code, haven't we, Chris? Is it Barmy Army, I'm guessing?
We have, yes, absolutely. So you can get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com with code Barmy Army in block capitals. Make your balls a priority this fall.
Masterfully done. And like we said before, I used mine the other week and you can eat your dinner off it. Hello and a very warm welcome to the Shackles Rob podcast. If you are a new listener, welcome along. And if you're an old listener, well, welcome back. We've got another belting episode on the way for you as well. And thanks for downloading the Sam Billings podcast and also the Phil De Freitas one before that as well. And we've got some more stellar guests coming up in the next few weeks to keep everybody busy during the end of this lockdown period and throughout the festive period as well. Chris Millard, Jack Brooks. How's tricks, folks? I mean, if you are just listening to this, you won't be able to see Brooksy, but if you are watching on our YouTube channel, you'll be able to see Brooksy looking like, I mean, just looks like a hospital patient. Oh, he's got his crutches there as well. Brooksy, how are you?
All right, Cocker. How are we doing? I'm all right. I've just, propped myself up with a pillow and I'm in bed at my girlfriend's apartment in London. It does look like I'm in a hospital environment though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Probably a bright white t-shirt doesn't help, but I promise you I've got pants on and everything, but yeah, still recovering from my surgery. I'm able to hobble around on crutches all right now, but haven't really done a lot for about a month or so, but all good, boys, all good.
Good stuff. Millard, I mean, you come bringing some beer news as well, don't you? This is great. I love the sound of this. Tell us more.
We do indeed, yes. We this week we have launched our 25th anniversary beer, ale, prosecco, all available at barmyarmy.com. We wanted to do something for Christmas. Essentially, we've been cooped up with no travel and no cricket and nothing to write home about. So we thought we'd do an anniversary beer for you guys and girls. There's prosecco on there and there's ale, there's lagers for anyone who likes it. I know I quite like a prosecco myself and I'm more than happy to admit that. But no, it's really nice ale, really nice lager, and the Prosecco is just Prosecco. I think they all taste the same, but Someone can tell me otherwise. It's not champagne. It's definitely not champagne. you'll see that when you see the pricing, but it's all on BalmyArmy.com. And please let us know if you like it or not. Please take a picture enjoying the Barmy Army 25th anniversary beer. Send it in and we'll feature you on the podcast, and we might send you some more goodies as well. So we want to see you all enjoying our Christmas tipple whilst listening to the podcast. It would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it'd be nice. Get in touch with us on social media, England's Barmy Army on Instagram and Barmy Army on Twitter, etc. And also, I mean, what are your thoughts on Prosecco, by the way, before we move on to some of our correspondence from listeners? I think Prosecco is like a new thing that's just,
magic,
isn't it? It's like, I'm sure 5 years ago, I know Prosecco existed, but it wasn't. Now everybody's like, oh, Prosecco. It's like a thing, isn't it? You know what I mean? I quite like it.
You were busy necking VK Blues when you were at Leeds Uni, mate.
Yeah, that's true.
That's proper stuff, that VK Blues, tropical, yeah, quids in. Headingly, those were the days, weren't they?
Yeah, but mums and girlfriends aren't going to stand around at Christmas with a blue WKD, are they? Or like five of them in each hand, like we used to do.
Well, hang on.
Sheffield,
we do.
Mate, anything goes, doesn't it?
That is true.
You've not lived if you hadn't had a Christmas red VK.
Well, I might have to just try the Prosecco and see if I can do that instead. Yeah, how's that?
Yeah, lovely bubbles. We've actually teamed up with Little Messers Brewing, who are a new brewery based in Sheffield, where the Barmy Army HQ is. So really interested to hear your feedback on the beer as well. It's something that we know that our members like. We've done it before and we're doing it again.
Love that. That sounds good. We've got a bit of correspondence in as well. Really enjoyed listening to Sam Billings. Posh but nice as pie. I quite enjoy that. Always enjoy the podcast. And if you could give my pal Big H a get well soon shout, hoping to see him score some runs next year in our local village league here in Gloucestershire. And that's from Dean. So Big H, big get well soon. Nice one. And yeah.
Get well soon, big fella.
Yeah, exactly.
We've also had a few survey responses in.
Right.
A few references to the podcast in there. So thank you guys for referencing the podcast in there. Someone actually said, please get more county cricketers on as well as the international players if you can, which is great feedback. And we'll try our best. We are trying to get as many players on for you as possible. But if you want a special guest on there, someone you would really like to listen to, we can pretty much get to anyone, we think, within the game with a little bit of effort. So let us know and we'll try and get them on.
Yeah, I like that. If there's a bit of clamour for certain people, we can try and target them. Also, we've got another one in as well from Lauren Hunter. Phil De Freitas, top man. Used to love watching him for England back in the day. Properly underrated. Love the mix of old and current players. Which I love that as well. It's quite good. So thanks for Lauren for getting in touch.
One thing that I need to mention, chaps, which I actually sent you on our Shackles Are Off WhatsApp, is my mum's text that she sent me when she listened to the Daffy podcast. She sent me a screenshot of a picture of a Manscaped advert saying, is this what I just heard about on your podcast? I went, yes, with a few crying laughing emojis, as people will know. And then her reply was pretty awful, to be honest. I might get data set for Christmas.
Oh, no.
Your dad's got a bit of boosh going on, has he?
Wow.
I have no idea, Brooksy.
That's incredible.
Cultivating something down there, really.
That's, I don't really know what to say to that, to be honest. Oh, wow. I mean, eat your dinner off it? Was that the phrase that we used?
It's the phrase that you used.
Yeah, I'm trying to, I was trying to paint you with the same brush, lads, that's all.
Used it.
Also, another thing, my favourite thing this week as well, it wasn't really directly connected to us. It was actually just a tweet generally sent that we then became aware of. It was from your mate, Brooksy, who said that the new Oxford vaccine was the best Oxford export since you, which I really liked.
Very funny, yeah. Dan Whiting of the Middle Stump fame on Twitter. He's a top man. He's had a few cricket books out and he decent little journo on cricket. Very funny guy. He does chirp up with gags about me now and again, but that one's pretty amused. It made me chuckle when I saw it.
I agree with him. Yeah, the Oxford vaccine.
All good things come out of Oxford, don't they? Nothing bad comes out of Oxford.
No,
of course. Me and a vaccine for the coronavirus.
And as we record this, Oxford United are about to kick off against Portsmouth, aren't they? So how are they getting on? Have they just?
It's nearly half time, and we're 1-0 down.
Oh really? Oh dear! Oh dear!
1-0. Tough start to the season.
Yeah, not the best, but we've got more points than Sheffield United this year, albeit in a different division.
And Wednesday, I think, so we're both in the same boat, mate.
Right, moving on. Our next guest is Graham Onions, who was a Barmy Army fan favourite. Didn't play as much as he should have, I mean, because of his injuries and whatnot, and also the fact Messrs Broad and Anderson were kind of in their pomp as Mr Onions was sort of trying to stake a claim to get in the England team more regularly. But we spoke to him, didn't we, last week, and he was great, really sort of insightful, played with some great players. He's had a fantastic county career and stuff as well. Brooksy, you'll like Graham Onions, will have come up against him a lot in county cricket and stuff as well. I mean, it was good to talk to him.
Yeah, I played against him a lot. He's someone I kind of looked up to in a way because similar age, and he was always that sort of level above in terms of he was in the England team and should have probably played a lot more if it wasn't for, like you said, Brawl and Anderson, which is, you look back, you like regret, but at the same time, it's nice to have played in that era with those guys. Obviously a big character on the circuit. Some of the worst chat as a bowler in terms of his sledging, it was just stinking. But a real great competitor and very, very good performer, especially with a new ball in hand. And, I know what the biggest shame is of obviously him retiring this year and not kind of getting a send-off because there's no crowds and he wasn't able to sort of go out on his own terms. So what your thoughts are as a sort of sportsman this year, especially in rugby, finished like a month ago. But you're getting all these sportsmen who have had long distinguished careers who are just sort of retiring in front of nobody, whether they've won a trophy or not. And it's just a bit of a damp squib at the end of your career, isn't it?
Yeah. It's pretty sad, isn't it? But what a career he's had. What an amazing career that he's had in that debut.
Exactly.
We don't talk to him about that. But also, we've got to make sure that we reference his brilliant songs.
Yeah, well, actually, Chris, on the recording, you actually do speak to him and ask him about his song and sing the songs to him, actually. So you talk about send-offs, Brooksy. What could be better than sitting on Zoom in your front room and having Millard sing a few Barmy Army songs to you? That's better than 5,000 or 6,000 at Old Trafford, isn't it?
I'll take it back. I want Millard to sing me songs when I retire.
Yeah.
I will do, Brooksy, but I'm just... Sorry, Greggy, I probably wasn't listening when you did the intro to this podcast. I was playing on like we were going to record it after, but yeah.
Oh, no smoke and mirrors. No, come on. Yeah.
Can you be a bit clearer when you're telling me what you're doing? I'm just drifting away and I'm playing the old card we played for so many years. But sorry, listeners, yeah, we sing his song. He talks about his debut. He talks about retirement. It's a belter.
Really. It is a belter. I'll tell you what, less of us pretending when or when we didn't record this, and let's just actually listen to when we talk to Graham Onions.
Shambles!
It is. The Shackles Are Our Podcast, which is, as Brooksy says, a shambles. Quite a boring question, but I was reading earlier. It started at a Gateshead Leisure Centre for you, Graham.
It did, yeah. I think I always had a passion for playing sport. I played cricket at school. I wouldn't necessarily say I got bullied at school, but I kind of had a passion for playing cricket. But then nobody else. It was football, hockey, and rugby. A bit of a funny story is I played rugby for the first time, and I tackled like the hardest lad in the year, and he was this tough lad, and I tackled him quite well, and then he punched us in the nose, so I never played again. So I was like, right, okay. So I was like, so of course he got into trouble, got put on report, and I was cried a little bit. I was young. I was like 17. No, I'm only joking. I was a bit younger than that. And then I just thought, right, I'm just going to carry on the cricket. I don't think rugby's my thing. And once again, I just remember little moments of, like, for example, going to Gateshead Leisure Centre, walking there with my mum and dad, coming out the gate. And I remember two girls that would get on the bus, and I thought, you know, they were quite pretty girls at the time, and about 15-year-old. And I was fully kitted out in my whites, carrying my bag on my shoulder, going to the Gateshead Leisure Centre. And they just laughed at me. But actually, it, to be honest, it didn't stop me from playing. And I think a lot of people would have been like, right, okay, I'm not going to do that because that's not cool either. But I just love the game. I love the feeling of being within a team. Always want to get better. It's something that has potentially held me back, which I'm sure we'll discuss at some stage, but also pushed me as far as I possibly can. But you're right, I just used to go to Gator Leisure Centre. Jeff Cook was there. He came down to watch at one stage. He was in the North East cricket in terms of an absolute legend. And yeah, the journey kind of began from there, really. I could talk for ages about this. So
yeah, go for it. Yeah, please do.
Just
we love it.
Stop me. He just said, look, would you mind coming and have a chat? And so I kind of went up the steps and talked to him. And I was like, yeah, man, this is Jeff Cook. But I didn't have a clue potentially how good I could be or what the journey could be with a, you know, being a professional cricketer. So he just turned around and said, look, would you like to come and have a ball at one of the lads tomorrow and kind of be involved with the thing? And I was like, well, yeah, of course I would. You know, playing against or training with some of the professionals and stuff. And I was probably, to be fair, I was probably around about 17. So I was getting to a stage where you're on the cusp of do you potentially make it or do you not? And obviously I could bowl quick, but I had no real control. Literally a couple of days later, I went down to Durham and I was bowling at Martin Love. He just got off the flight. Unbelievable player. He was all overseas at the time. He had a woolly hat on in the net, which were up and down. He had a helmet on over the top, absolutely freezing, just got off a flight. And there's me tearing in, bowling as fast as I could, bowling bouncers. You must have been thinking, what's this guy doing? And then it was just, you know, a few weeks later, I got offered my first contract. I sat down once again with Jeff Cook at the bar called Austin's at the time at Durham. And I had my mum on my left and my dad on the right. And Jeff Cook just said, look, would you like to be a professional cricketer? And I was like, absolutely. I would absolutely love it. But I was just, I was at that stage where I was like, right, so I was sending my UCAS forms away. I'd just done a pretend A level. So I did a JNVQ and I got a distinction in that. So I got my grades, but as soon as he mentioned about playing sport, I was like, yeah, count me in. I just said, mum, dad, can I do it? They just said, look, follow your dreams type of thing. And, you know, the rest of it now is, especially in the stage where I am now in my career, I can look back now and actually go, you know, that was actually that was a really good time in my life.
That's awesome, that. I mean, what a question to be asked. Do you want to be a professional cricketer? I mean, people have asked me that. I've said, yeah. And then they've gone, well, you're not going to be, son of a crap. So that's awesome. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, so you must have, look, everyone's kind of modest at that, but you must have had a lot of talent. Did you play England age groups or were you playing kind of, you know, that kind of stuff to schoolboys and all that?
I played schoolboy. So, I mean, Brooks, you might know this a little bit, but obviously you want to get picked for England in the 19s, but I got picked for the Doe 11, which is like Development of Excellence 11, which is basically like the team underneath that level. So I just wasn't quite good enough to go up to that stage. And there was players, I don't know who was in that group, but that crop of players. It's probably a lot of the, like, you know, Broads and Bresnans who I didn't know at the time, but I kind of, obviously over the years, I've got to know. And I remember there was like me, Philip Mustard, who were just the kind of rough diamonds as such. I think I can look back on now and think, you know, we had that talent, but we just didn't quite have the ability right there and then. And I remember going to Abergavenny in Wales and playing against the team there, and we roomed together, and it was awesome. It was great. I didn't play those levels. And it was probably a good thing. I didn't get pushed into it. I didn't get overcoached. I just kind of just followed the dream as such and just kind of kept on playing, and it's kind of worked out all right.
One question on that, Bunny. Do you reckon about being rough diamonds? Because I've always seen myself as a bit of that because I was a bit late and my sort of route in, but you were a state school lad as well, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And obviously Colonel would have been as well. Do you think how much of an influence it's having? There's a bit of conversation going around in cricket at the minute about state school, public school and opportunities and all this sort of stuff. Are you happy, like, looking back, do you think maybe if I'd had a scholarship, I might have not been as rough? Could have been polished up a bit more? Are you like, nah, I like my way I've got in. I wouldn't have changed it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, Brooks. I've certainly not got any regrets. I've got no problem with the way it's kind of gone. Potentially, could it have sped up the process of So, for example, the first 4 years of me being a professional player, I averaged 34 and I would go at 5 and over, but I would get wickets. So I get 50 wickets at a good strike rate, but I'd go for a lot of runs and I had some ups and downs. I was generally thinking, oh, I'm getting wickets, but I'm not enjoying it, getting smacked all over the place. So it potentially, so for example, with me being at a college at the moment, and they've got access to, you know, 3 or 4 quality coaches, that, you know, it has to speed up the process. But also I quite enjoyed not getting coached as such. Like, you know, Jeff Cook was never a technical coach. It was all about go out there and learn, and just if you want to do it, go out there and play the game and almost just be as good as you can be, just practice. And I've got a lot of time for that. I really don't. I think a lot of people go massively in technical and just try and change you, and it's all robotic as such, and I just don't, that's just not me at all. Like, I think if I got overcoached, I probably wouldn't have played, or I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. Yeah. The other thing as well, kind of going off it a little bit, is I played badminton at a really high level. I thought that was a really good thing for me. I kind of mixed and matched in between the two sports, and I think it worked really well.
Give you a game sometime. I used to play county badminton when I was a kid.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where you can't. You've got a dodgy right hand.
I was going to say, I'm backing
Graham at the minute, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'll admit, our mobility around the court might not be that great anymore.
Well, I can't even pick the shuttle up at the minute, so don't worry.
God, it sounds like a really good game of badminton, this one, lads. Blimey, yeah.
We'll be veterans.
On a serious note, you mentioned Jeff Cook a couple of times, and we've had... We've had another lad on from Durham on this before, and I think anyone you ever speak to in Durham cricket, obviously since its professional inception, the early 90s, Jeff would have been there involved. How much of an influence has he been on Durham? Because I think if you speak to anybody from Durham cricket, they would mention Jeff pretty much straight away at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was like a father figure, and a lot of my coaching has been, and actually, to be fair, playing as well as, you know, is with a lot of respect for him, and he's kind of put Durham on the map, and we had some seriously golden era there where we just had an unbelievable team, but also we had good players, of course, but we were led in the right direction. There was no real pressure as such, but he certainly did it in a way where he took the pressure off us and just let us perform. You know, we'd play a lot of games. We wouldn't go in the nets and, I suppose, challenge us all the time. It was just like, look, it's okay. You can have a bad net, walk out of it and learn from it, and it's fine. Of course, there's times where you maybe, you need a little bit of a kick up the backside, but also there's times where you just think, look, it's fine, don't worry. You're just a young kid learning your game. And of course, everybody wants to, you know, play first team or play for England from a really young age, but actually just enjoy the dream as such.
Yeah. Yeah, you probably, most of you were from the Durham area as well, so you would have had a togetherness which would have added to it as well, wouldn't you? You could always just playing against Durham, like, so together as a team, even if they were an underdog going into the game, they just had that attitude and a bit of fight about them, the togetherness, so they were going to stick together regardless.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's the feeling that we wanted. We always felt as though, I mean, there was a lot of games where we didn't have overseas. But actually, we had an overseas, like a 12th man, because we were together as a team. And especially at Durham, you know, if you potentially win that first session, you're just all over teams. I mean, I remember playing against teams like Sussex, or Somerset, for example, where they're really good pitchers. As soon as they come to places like Durham and they lose that first hour, they're just gone, you know, mentally gone. And we had that real belief that if you get on top of teams, you'll dominate them. I mean, it didn't always go that way. Of course it didn't, because you can lose wickets in clusters. But we certainly had lads that were fighting for each other. You know, I would be bowling at one end for the guy at the other end, and he'd be doing it. And, you know, we were creating that environment, but, you know, 100%.
Yeah. Well, look, we'll come on. We'll talk a bit more about Durham. We'll come back to Durham a little bit, but we want to talk about you. Because you know,
it's gonna be boring.
No, it's not. It's great because, look, you know, you it's interesting actually that you were sort of in and around England squads from sort of like 2006-ish, but never really got a full sniff, did you? Like, well, you didn't actually play until 2009. So, what was that like? Was that frustrating, or were you just kind of happy to be around the squad and around some of those players that were obviously, you know, they've got loads of caps under the belt.
Yeah, I'm a bit older now, so I can't remember exactly, you know, back in those days. But I think I think the call up in 2009 was probably the right time for me. I'd kind of got into some really good form. I think it came at a time where I was like, I was ready to go and I was ready to play. You know, potentially if it came in 2008, even though I was taking wickets, I possibly wasn't ready and I potentially could have been undone. I think probably the disappointing thing is that when I got to 2009, I was really in my prime. I felt as though I was going in the right direction. That's when I didn't play potentially as much as I would have liked, or maybe deserved, if I want to put it that way. But I just, as I said, I've got no regrets. I mean, I loved, another great coach of mine was Kevin Shine, a really good mate, but also somebody who was just there for me all the time. He just helped me along my journey. So that, as I said, 2006 to, you know, to that 2009 when I played, you know, Jeff Cook and all and Kevin Shine were two massive influences that in that 3 years I developed a hell of a lot. Mm. And you know, potentially that 3 years there, going back to the earlier point, was the 3 years if I'd went a school where I had loads of influences at a younger age, I potentially could have closed that gap to a year, if that makes sense, instead of the 3 years. But it wasn't to be, and you know, 2009 eventually came and it was a dream.
Well, yeah, I was just about to go on to that, Graham. You made the most of it in 2009 with your debut game. Fond memories of that day, I bet.
Yeah, unbelievable. Obviously, mum and dad there. Obviously at Lords and playing against the West Indies, some unbelievable players. Just unsure what to kind of expect from the day and you know, the rest of the journey going forward. I've always believed that, you know, you play every game as though it's your last type of thing. So it was a dream. Yeah, it was fantastic. Obviously, the first wicket of Lendl Simmons and Court Strauss. I've always had a good record at Lords. I've enjoyed that where my lines of bowling close to the stumps and attacking off stump, bowling either, you know, with the slope or down, you know, down the hill, kind of makes no difference. Really, you get the ball to nip around a little bit, and yeah, that was a, didn't start very well, to be fair. I think I bowled two overs for 20, so I was under the pump a little bit. But then, it ended up, you know, walking off the field a pretty proud man, to be fair.
So. Amazing, and I think there's some pretty impressive wickets in the first five for. We're like, yeah, that'll do me. Test debut done, five for, that'll do. Don't want to play again. Don't want to take the shine off it. I'm sure you were raring to go for the next test though.
Well, I got a couple of the absolute belting wickets. Have caught down the leg side as well. So I think you're being quite generous there. But no, I mean, I was potentially a little bit expensive, but then also like, look, I've got my name's on the honours board. I'm not really bothered. You know, I worked hard for that time. You know, I've got the ball upstairs. I just remember, I mean, one of the amazing things, in Brooksy, you know this, is that when you get your cap, it's a really proud moment, and it's something that you cherish. And I got it from a hero, Darren Goff. Yeah. People always tell me, why is he a hero? I just loved, and Dale Steyn's my hero as well. I just love the passion on the field. I love the way that they go about their work. But I also think it's good to have a bit of fun as well. You know, people forget that, and it's all, you know, a bit the pressure of international cricket or whatever. And it you know, he gave us me cap, me and Brezzy on the same day, and it was amazing. Yeah, it was just, you know, a really special day. And you know, as I said, my family were there. They had a fair few glasses of champagne as well, so they were well on the way when I saw them at about 7 o'clock to congratulate us.
Right, we're just going to break away from the podcast then to talk to Chris and also his colleague Becky, because, guys, you've launched something that's going to be quite significant. And if you are a cricket fan and you're listening to this podcast, it may just catch your attention. So, Chris, tell me what it is and what it's all about.
Thank you, Greggy. We are delighted to launch the International Cricket Supporters Committee, which is very much a committee to bring together all the fans from around the world that are in supporters group to give fans a global voice. Throughout the World Cup in 2019, we got to know a lot of the other fan groups really well, and we know them from touring all the cricket-playing countries throughout the world. And we thought that over the next couple of years, can we do something to give fans more of a global voice in the game? And I'm very pleased that someone shared my passion for this, and that is Becky, who is on the show with us now. And Becky has helped me no end come to terms with what it is we're trying to do, what we're trying to launch. And we're here now, and we're launching, and we're very proud of where it's at the minute. Bex works for the Cricket Supporters Association. She runs it at the minute, so something that we're also very passionate about in the UK. And she's been an absolute godsend, to be honest, getting us to this stage. So thanks, Bex.
You're welcome. No, it's a brilliant project. And as Chris said, it is very much about giving fans a global voice within the game. As the Cricket Supporters Association, that's what we're all about. We are literally set up to give fans a voice because we believe passionately, and I know Chris and the Barmy Army guys do as well, that fans do have a really positive role to play within cricket. And quite often decisions are made where perhaps fans are the kind of the last people to be thought about and are presented with, this is the fait accompli, this is what's happening within the game. And we just very much felt that, you know, obviously in a UK level, this is what we do. And obviously we have a great partnership with the Barmy Army as well, great support from them for that. But then globally, let's see what else we can do. And I mean, amazingly, we've already got 8 other national fan organisations signed up. So, and that's ranging from Bharat Army, Astani Army, Bangladesh Cricket Sports Association, to Richie's and Beige Brigade and the Caribbean podcast, and you know, loads of different partners already signed up. And so I love this stat that we already represent, with the International Cricket Supporters Committee, already represent over 1 million cricket fans across the world. So
fantastic. So
that's pretty cool.
Well, it is. I mean, it is. That's a big number of people. And there's actually far more fans out there, isn't there, as well, you know, to kind of get on board with it. So when you say represent and give them a voice, is that around ticketing? Is it around just general kind of support? You know, do you tell me what this is about?
Absolutely. So it's kind of, there's two things. So it is, it's looking at the kind of global issues that there are within the game. So ticketing, scheduling, diversity, kind of racism, you know, some of the really big chunky stuff. But then it's also sharing kind of best practice. So when you're touring, what to different communities, what, you know, within that country, what are the kind of local knowledge and that we should know, and the insight. So it's kind of two things. It's giving fans a voice through their national organizations, their fan organizations being members of the committee. But as we kind of say as well, it is also about just sharing experiences, sharing knowledge, and then giving other the kind of stakeholders within the game, so the ICC and other global partners, the opportunity to have somewhere to come and say, what do you think about this? Or this is a, you know, what's going to happen with this? And so, you know, there's a lot of different elements to it. And I just, you know, we're so chuffed that 8 organizations have already signed up. And as Chris and I have talked about it, and it's like, we're looking for others to sign up. So, you know, it's very much a case of if you run a national kind of fan organization, get in contact with us and let us know. And then hopefully you can join the committee as well.
Absolutely. Great point, Beck. Great point. With this podcast being listened to in over 110 countries, there must be people out there that know supporters groups that represent different parts of the world. Please do get in touch, info@barmyarmy.com, as you know, from listening to this podcast, and we will try and get you involved with the International Supporters Committee. But I think the biggest and most important thing from me is that we want to share the Barmy Army expertise that we've learned over 25 years of touring with other fan groups, and just show them how big they can be if they really want to be, and also how much fun they can have touring, supporting their cricket team.
Absolutely. It's a great message to send. Guys, thank you very much for that. If you do want to get in touch, do get in touch in the ways that Chris has just told you to. Walk into that side and that dressing room and stuff. Well, yeah, because you'd been around the squad, I'm guessing it's different. You weren't kind of like the young pup, and it wasn't like a oh my word, there was probably no awe. You probably knew most of the lads and played against them and had competitive sort of cricket against them. That's quite a different environment to sort of what we hear it's like off some of the younger lads now who go in. I mean, was it still a little bit of you've got to prove yourself until we start treating you like one of the boys? Or was it just, you know, this guy's a solid professional and he's clearly a very good cricketer? And I suppose then obviously your debut helps as well when you've sort of come off having had loads of success. But what was that like, that kind of environment? Because I know it's only 11 years ago, but it seems to have changed a lot, cricket now, in that sort of short space of time, the dressing room culture thing.
Yeah, it does. But, and it changes so much. I mean, there's so much cricket that gets played at the moment. It's like you go into different dressing rooms all the time. I mean, you know, RPLs and all of these teams, you get the course, you get to know everybody, but it's still, you're still joining a new team. You know, as I said, once again, you know, when I joined Lancashire, of course, I came with a pretty good, you know, profile behind us. But of course, I'm going to a dressing room that I don't really know the players. I was lucky at the time I went in with Keaton Jennings, who we naturally could kind of buddy up a little bit and we could kind of go that way and be mates. We've always got somebody to ring or whatever. But that England dressing room that I went to, of course, you naturally go through the door. For starters, you're playing for England, so it's amazing. It's a hell of a journey to start off with. But then also you've got, you know, you got Strauss in the far corner. You had Fred on one of the seats, who was an absolute legend. He literally came over, shook my hand and made me feel welcome straight away. Honestly, KP was fantastic as well. He was great. I bowled a lot at him. He made me feel really welcome. The bottom line is that whatever team you go into is, they want you to win. They want you to do well. I think everyone's been at my stage. They're making a debut in their first squads, and they don't want you to feel almost like nervous and scared, because naturally you will feel that anyway. So I think from my point of view is that they try to take the pressure off me as much as I can. I mean, the funny one with that is I played against Somerset and I did really well before I got selected. But then the lead up to that test match, it rained literally 5 days in a row and we couldn't train. And I've always been a person that I need to bowl. Like I just want to bowl all the time. And I had to spend so much time with the psychologist saying, look, I haven't been able to bowl. I'm not ready to play. Like I need to, and he was like, "Grim, you've literally bowled, you know, 350 overs before the test match starts. Like you'd be all right. Don't worry about it." I was like, "No, I need to get it out there. I need to bowl. I need to bowl on the slope. I need to do this. I need to do that." And he was like, "Grim, just relax. You're bowling beautifully. You're bowling really well." And that was a bit of a downside for me, because I think I always challenged myself to get better, but I always wanted to bowl. Like I just wanted to. Every time I went out to play or to train, I was like, right, I want to get better, like all the time. It wasn't just, I want to necessarily get loose. I want to think, right, I want to work on an in-swing or bowl a good bouncer or bowl a good length or whatever it might be. So actually the build-up to that test was also still putting myself under pressure to perform. It was good. You know, as I said, it worked out really well in the end. Something I'm very proud of.
Yeah. Amazing. Such a good feeling that. And look, you know, touring as well. I mean, that's the thing that we forget. And actually, it's quite a nice thing. I mean, as fans...
We certainly don't forget that, Greggy, then.
Well, no. I mean, look,
what we do.
As fans, it's amazing. And Chris, you know, with the Barmy Army, Chris has been sort of everywhere, all over the world. I've been on a couple of tours as well as a supporter. As a player, I mean, look, you've still got a bit of downtime, haven't you, Graham? So that, I mean, that's nice, isn't it? Because obviously it's hard work, hard work, hard work. But if you've got a little gap between test matches, you can go out and do stuff. So you must have had a few memorable sort of, you know, little trips round to different spots and restaurants and, you know, Dara mentioned bars as well, you know. And
oh, no, we don't do any of that.
No.
I mean, I've got to say that, you know, the fans that with the Barmy Army and the support of fans is that it's rude not to have a beer every now and again with them and kind of, you know, celebrate. And, you know, that game in, I think it was in Durban, in South Africa. I'll always remember that one. You know, we're singing the song and we had Collie kind of doing his...
Deco song.
Yeah, you know, doing all that. That legend of a man who used to do all the singing. But, you know, what an experience that was. I mean, winning a test match and looking out there and it was, you know, the glass opened and stuff and they all chanting, singing stuff. It's like, wow, this is, honestly, it's a dream.
Can you remember the first time you heard your song, Graham?
To be honest, I, think, I don't know. Are you going to sing it to me?
Well, I've got them both, thanks to Gilo and Tomo for sending me them. But
all right, okay.
The first one off Gilo is, onions, he's going to make you cry. He's going to make you cry. He's going to make you cry. Very good. And the other one was, who's that coming out to the crease? It's Graham Onions. It's Graham Onions. I like that. Oh, I like them both, to be honest.
I didn't even know I had them.
Yeah. Well, that's what they sent me over. But I wasn't around back in 2010 when you had your famous 17 deliveries. Was it against the best bowler in the world at the time? Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to talk about that too much, about saving, you know, saving England and all that. No.
The floor is yours.
It's funny because I laugh about it.
Right, bowlers absolutely love batting, don't they? If there's ever a chance to get a name in lights with a batting, you just don't stop talking about it. I can talk about batting more than bowling.
Well, you know you're struggling with your bowling when you get remembered for your batting, that's for sure. But no, I mean, that test match was, I was bowling really nicely. I felt as though I was in good form. I just didn't, at the end of the series, I didn't get picked for the last test match. I got dropped. I got told I was fatigued, but I was really happy with the way it kind of went. I just didn't get the wickets. I had a lovely chat with Jack Callis at the end of that, just saying, look, you've got a huge potential going forward and you know, you've had a good series. But coming back to the batting is, I was quite lucky in a way that a lot of that happened really fast. I think if I had my pads on and I was ready to go as such, and that sounds silly, but and I was waiting for a long time, I would have been a lot more nervous. I mean, both of the test matches, especially the Cape Town one, we had Bell and Collingwood. Literally, they were like, oh, this is the draw. It was just after tea, we were absolutely flying, no problem. And all of it was like, bang, 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 bang. We lost loads of wickets. And I was like, oh, crap, I'm going to have to get my pads on, yeah? Literally strapped my pads on. And I was almost out of the crease going, I was out there, you know? And Swanee was there at the time, which is obviously a perfect person to bat with because he started like talking in a Geordie accent. massive Newcastle fan. It was just, straight away I was like, right, okay, come on, we can kind of do it. And the first thing I said, I was like, I can't face Dale Steyn. I had to face a couple of balls off him. Luckily he didn't bowl it straight, because otherwise he would have got me out easy. But Swanee was like, what, so you'd rather face Morkel and not Steyn? I was like, 100%. He's like, okay, we've got a deal. He was like, literally like shook my hand in the middle. He was like, okay. He was like, literally, come on then, Pet. Let's go on. You got that, and I'll get that end. So I was like, yeah. And then obviously that last over of facing Morkel, the first ball thudded into us, and like when it got stuck in me grill, you had Dumini and Smith snarling at it. So the ball was stuck in me grill. So I was like shaking my head, trying to get the ball out. I was like, am I actually allowed to take it out? I was too scared to do anything.
Yeah.
Obviously saying stuff to us in Afrikaans, which I'm sure it was fine, but I couldn't understand it. It was obviously massive appeal, kind of backed away a little bit and fended and came off my shoulder. Massive appeal, not out. Yeah, and then the famous, you know, fist up. It was... I mean, obviously spending time, we stopped at the one and only hotel as well. I mean, which is just an unbelievable hotel. I was with me wife, Emma, and stuff. And it was just, you know, visiting vineyards and, you know, lovely wine, lovely food. Just an incredible place to go, you know, safaris. Touring life as a cricketer is... it's just part of the dream, you know, it really is. And I can look back now, as once again, and now I've finished, is I probably took it for granted a little bit. I just kind of, once again, I was playing all the time to get better and to enjoy the journey, but I didn't probably appreciate, like, Queenstown, flying over the top of Queenstown and playing on somebody's grounds where it's just the most beautiful, picturesque place in the world. And you go through a bit of a tough time or you bowl a bad spell and you don't appreciate what's around. Mm. So you definitely, at some stage, you have to go, right, okay, what would Jeff Cook do now? What would he be saying? And he said, just enjoy the ride, enjoy the process, and you'll be fine. Yeah. But yeah.
Do you think that, play, go on, Brooksy. Sorry, no, go on, Brooksy.
Quickly. You had a stint in grey cricket in Perth, didn't you? Back when you were about 20 or so.
I did. I played for South Perth on the roundabout, unfortunately, where Ben Holyoake crashed his car, unfortunately. But that was, I mean, once again, a brilliant experience. Learned a hell of a lot.
Yeah, no.
I've had a few stints in grey cricket in Perth with Willerton. That made me grow up a lot and made me realise a lot more about my cricket.
Yeah, that time there was fantastic. I remember going there. I remember it was snowing in England. I went across there and I played. I can't remember what the team was. Might have been like Bayswater Morley, and I was playing for South Perth, and they had red helmets. And I didn't know him at the time, but it was Luke Ronchi, who of course was a hell of a player. And I bowled, and I was in decent, you know, I felt okay, but of course it was snowing here. I went across. I got picked up from the airport. I had my arm on the windowsill. On the window with the window down. Literally, I had third-degree burns on my arm. I had blisters on my arm. It was horrendous.
Oh my word!
I bowled two overs in the game, and I couldn't. I was like, the prickly heat, and you're sweating. I was like, I'm not made up for this at all. Horrendous experience. But of course, and then I got dropped to the second team. They were like, oh, look, you need to just, you know, play a few games and stuff. Then actually I got dropped to the third team. But it was all, I think that I look back now, it was all a process of just finding out about me and how I'm going to, you know, get better. And it was good. It was good. I mean, obviously, I wanted to go across there and do really well. But the advantage of it is I came back and played for Durham and I did do well. So it kind of worked out well for me.
Just going back to what you said about Jeff Cook then, Graham, about how, you know, just enjoy it. That whole approach of what would he say now? You know, just relax, soak it all in, drink it in. Is that what we see now with Mark Wood and Stokesy, and to an extent as well, you know, Keaton Jennings, you know, he looked like he was kind of enjoying it as well. And when we watched him, we saw him in Sri Lanka scoring that ton. And he just looked like he was just drinking it in. Is that a mantra that's kind of been instilled? And, you know, perhaps, I don't know, maybe you've even passed that on to them and actually, you know, told them, given them that advice yourself.
Well, it's funny, the three people that you talk about there is obviously their local, you know, Durham lads and Northeast lads who are class. You know, Ben Stokes has got that aura about him that it's almost like, I don't care, I'm just going to go out there and play and perform and I back myself 100%. So I think he naturally probably had that in him anyway. And that's probably why he's in a world beater and probably one of the best cricketers ever. Mark Wood, without a doubt, is a bit more like me with regards to he's had a lot of injuries and a lot of ups and downs. And I think the Jeff Cook, you know, mantra as such has definitely rubbed off on him and kind of, you know, when you have so many downs and you worry about your ankle or your back or whatever it is as a fast bowler, you get to a stage, you know, you just think, tell you what, I'm just going to give it a crack. I'm just going to give it a go and I'm just going to give it everything. And you should, of course, you should do that all the time, but you don't, and you kind of just forget that you know what you're doing, what are you actually doing right now? And I think Mark Wood, without a doubt, is at probably at that stage now, and that might be a little bit of, you know, a bit of his personality of, you know, having a bit of fun and having a bit of a laugh. He's always been like that character, but it might be even more so now, and it's, you know, it's rubbing off on him now. He's, you know, he's fit. He's bowling well. He's obviously rapid, and he's winning games. So, you know, good on him.
How good would Woody be in the Ashes down under? By the way, how frightening would that be? A full firing Mark Wood. It'd be brilliant.
Yeah, special.
It would
be special. I mean, he's got an unbelievable. I mean, we Langs played against Durham this year, and he came back. And I forgot how quick, you know, 95 mile an hour was. And he bowled. And Keaton Jen's got 100, to be fair. He played absolutely brilliantly. Honestly, I kid you not, he was rapid. And I'm talking about, you know, we had Sean Tate back in the day, who were overseas at Durham. And it was as quick as that, comfortably. Rapid. So if he plays in that if he, you know, if he plays in that series down under, you know, count me, I'll be wearing my Barmy Army hat and count me in, count me, and I'll be there.
Quite right.
Yes, love that. Chris, very welcome, isn't he? You know, come along.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. More the merrier on tour, you know, Graham. It's a free for all when it comes to singing and having a bit of a laugh in the stands. But just
count me in.
Just on that, the bowling attack for England for the future, obviously. Paceman yourself, England. Are you excited by the England bowling options for the future, especially with the Ashes looming?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, Brooks, you haven't quite made my team, pal. You're not.
I wouldn't get in your seventh team, I think, currently.
I think the you know, the barrier fast bowlers that we've got right now is of course it's exciting. You know, I've spoken to Jimmy. He's unbelievably excited about going, you know, constantly getting better. And at this period of time with, of course, lockdown, and, you know, it'll either kind of put some bowlers off and they'll find it hard, especially the older generation. But I think it'll also prolong people as long as you're staying fit and you've got that desire to get better. So I do honestly believe that, you know, Broad, Anderson, these guys can go to Australia. Walks, you know, Wood, I think Stone is a phenomenal bowler that can, you know, get through his injuries and he'll be great. I mean Craig Owen, unbelievable. These guys probably deserve to play a few more games. You've got, of course, Wood and Archer. You've got I still think someone like Jamie Overton. I think he's, you know, an exciting prospect. He hasn't played as much cricket as maybe he's deserved. He's made the move to hopefully get some more cricket in. Saki Mahmood, you've got Richard Gleeson. I mean, honestly, you've got players that are exciting to think, right, okay, what, the future's bright. But also, like, you've got to let these guys go out and play and bowl, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff now on, you know, you're playing so many different formats. You've got to, especially the longer format of the game, you've got to get your 450 overs in and bowl, get your 50, 60, 70 wickets.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah, just big a bit. Time.
I always felt at my best when I bowled a lot of overs. Like if you play a full summer of county cricket, obviously not this summer, but a normal summer, you'd be 500 overs plus, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and then you practice overs and stuff on top of it. And I mean, the GPS, I mean, I never had a GPS at Durham. Durham couldn't afford to have those. You go to Lancs, and of course you get that. And you get to June and you speak to somebody at Lancs and you go, look, Graham, you've got to be wary. You're in the red zone. I'm like, look, I've never really heard of the red zone. You're racking up, you know, 350 overs and the rest of the guys are, you know, have been looked after. They're on 200. But it's just your body gets hardened and you need to do it. I mean, these guys who are going to get selected to leapfrog players, you've got to, if you get 70 wickets, as a batter, you average 45. You've got a great chance of playing for England, definitely. Yeah. And that's always been, in my opinion, what you've got to aspire to be. And you aspire to be someone like Mark Strescothock, playing like going thousands of runs all the time, and or taking loads of wickets. That's what you should be looking up to, you know, without a shadow of a doubt.
You took a boatload of wickets, didn't you? And obviously finishing up at Lancs, and that was, you know, a great end, obviously changing club as well. How's that, you know, was that weird? I mean, Brooksy, you speak about this on the pod a bit, moving to a different club in a different environment. What was that like for you, though? Because you were a Durham boy through and through, as we found out on the pod. I mean, you know, you sort of lived and breathed Durham. So, obviously, moving on into Lancs, and I know you said the dressing room was kind of welcoming, and you obviously had a bit of, you know, that amazing pedigree, having played for England and playing an Ashes series, etc. But what was that like? What, you know, going into a completely strange environment? It must have been a bit weird.
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, at the time, I didn't really want to leave. That's my home county. It's where I grew up, and I wanted to. Of course, I wanted to probably finish my career there. It wasn't to be. Equally, I made the move, and I had two fantastic years. I had an unbelievable county that I played against over the years, and I was thinking, yeah, mate, that's a good county. You know, that's a good team. So much, you know, history and tradition and stuff. So very proud, you know, to wear the red rose. And be part of that team. It definitely gives you, you know, a little... I've never needed a kick up the backside, but it definitely makes you train a little bit harder and kind of get the absolute maximum out of me. I've always said that, you know, Dave Roberts, who's the head of the S&C and Sam Byrne, that absolutely gave me everything to get the best out of me. Of course, you need to train, but you need a good backroom staff as well. And I made the move. It was great. I settled in. I found it really, really enjoyable to go and play. Unfortunately, we got relegated, so that wasn't particularly ideal. But I got a few wickets. I settled in. The year after, we got promoted, and we'll not talk about this year because it's been crap, hasn't it? So, it wasn't an ideal moving, but I moved for a few different reasons, and I'm. I suppose in a way, I've got no regrets. It's been a good move in the end.
Yeah.
Sometimes it'd be good, Graham, freshen up your career, mate, give you a different taste of another environment. Because I think you're going into coaching maybe, aren't you? So it gives you an idea of different environments. Obviously, you've had England environment and a county environment, but you get a taste of how different coaches work, different environments. It'll really help you going forward, a bit more of understanding about things, won't it?
Yeah, I agree. And working with different players and what you know, different players' needs and things like that. So, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, naturally nervous. You do. You think, well, no matter if you play X amount of games or, you know, you make a move from a young age, you know, you still walk into that change room and you naturally think, okay, I want to impress them or I want to do the right thing. But I think it's the same as anything. You know, you want to score your first 100 or you want to get your first 5. It takes the pressure off you and you make you feel welcome. And, you know, I was able to do that, relatively early on. So I kind of settled in quite nicely.
Before we go, I just want to make sure we've not missed something. I feel like we have. An ODI debut at Chesterley Street against the Aussies, getting out an opener, who is now the current Australian Test captain. Is that right?
Yeah, Tim Payne. Yeah, I remember it well.
Surely that deserves some airtime on the Barmy Army podcast.
Definitely.
Aussie captain and an ODI debut.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I love that. So talk us through that, Greg. I mean, first of all, by the way, playing an ODI against the Aussies at Chesterley Street as a debut, I mean, brilliant. It doesn't get any better for you than that, surely.
Yeah, I played a test match as well, actually, which is unbelievable because we went from Lords to against the West Indies to Durham. Overcast day. Yeah, sorry, I know you asked me about the ODI stuff, but yeah, so I played at Lords and then went to Chesterfield, played the came on the ball in my second test match. Chris Gale hit me for 6 straight off my head, second ball.
Oh, nice.
and I was like, oh my word. But the plan was to him was to, you know, to bowl on his hip, you know, and I was like, bowl on his hip? Well, I've always just bowled county, you know, just top of off stump, you'll be all right, straight over my head, 6, right, champion. I did actually get him out, which was quite nice, and then Jimmy Anderson swung around callers on an overcast day. But I mean, it's a thing that we always seem to do is that if you perform well and you're in the setup, it's like, okay, you get picked in the ODI squad. And of course it was amazing. I absolutely loved the day. Once again, I bowled nicely. I don't think I went for many runs and I got Tim Payne out. I'd like to say with the wobble team, it was probably a little bit scrambled more than anything. And nicked him off through to Matt Pryor. But I probably wasn't ready, you know, to play. I remember going on, I only played 5 games. I didn't have a great slower ball. I didn't particularly have a great Yorker because it was something I never really practiced. But I got picked because I'd done well in the red ball in the test match team. I would have loved to have played more white ball cricket. It would have been great. I would have loved it. But as I said, you know, I didn't quite hit the pinnacles of, you know, with the red ball as I could have, you know, with the white balls I could have. So, you know, it's something which, you know, it's fine. I enjoyed that day once again. I remember, you know, walking out in the crowd, being there and kind of having all my family there. They pretty much took up the whole stand, really. So that was, you know, that was good fun.
That's amazing,
special day.
Fantastic.
Yeah, amazing, amazing memory when it's your home county. You can think of that for the rest of your life. Something that you can look back on.
I tell you what, Brooks, this is how much of a bit of a badger I am as well. Right? So on that day, we bowled first, and you might think I'm crazy for this, but it's just a bit of an insight of kind of what I was talking about earlier. So we bowled first, bowled 10 overs for whatever. Came off the field, went to the net by myself, and had a bag of Red Bulls because I wanted to. There was test match. There was obviously an Ashes series later on in the summer. Had a bag of Red Bulls, and I didn't have an in-swinger. So basically, over that ODI series, I taught myself how to bowl an in-swinger. So I just it's bonkers, isn't it? Really, I mean, can you imagine young lads doing that now?
The
red zone, and I've just bowled. Yeah. So I just got a bag of Red Bulls. Took my, no one really knew, and I was like, right, okay. Started off with a massive, dip me left shoulder and cocked my wrist, and then I bowled it actually in for the first time at Michael Clark in the at Edgbaston it was. It's crazy, isn't it? Really, but that was just my way of going about my work and how I wanted to get better all the time.
That's
fantastic lesson that you always learn. You're always trying to get better. But how old were you at that point?
Oh God, can somebody Google that quickly? It was 2009. 2009.
27 maybe.
Yeah.
You've got to like 27 international cricket, BOSC Championship cricket, first class cricket for that long, and you didn't have a adequate enough in swing. It's like that's crazy to think to how it works like that. But testament to your attitude, really. It sort of sums you up in a way, because I'm sure you had your fair share of injuries, which is horrible, and it eventually got you this summer, which is so sad for someone like you to go out like that. But if you look at what you battled back from in 2010, that initial back injury?
Yeah.
You talk about resilience and always trying to get better. You must be so proud of coming back from that, getting back into the England team and going on to have such a long career.
Yeah, Brooks, it's very kind. You kind of get a bit emotional, actually, because you think, like all you've ever wanted to do since you signed that first contract is play. And I made a pact to myself, of course, 2010, was to get the absolute most out of your body and to be as good as you can be. And going back, obviously, I don't necessarily want to talk about the injury and how it all kind of planned out. But when I got injured, I didn't think it was the end. But I did make a pact that I'll go until I literally can't go anymore. And I look back now thinking, actually, I did. I got everything out of me, suppose my attitude, my skill, my body that I possibly could. And ultimately it's broke. but yeah, I mean, I'm, from when I got injured, I, of course you have a tricky period where you start thinking, yeah, mate, what am I going to do? This is pretty awesome, awful, but I'm okay now, I'm happy. I can look back and it's great to talk to you guys. And it's nice when people say nice things, because it makes you think, actually, I've done okay. I've enjoyed the journey. It's up to me to try and pass some of that knowledge on to some of the young lads and kind of, live the next chapter of my life, which hopefully will be, coaching.
I was going to finish off on that. So is that coaching? Is it that the route that you're wanting to go down? Is it bowling coach or general coach?
Yeah, I obviously specialise in bowling coach. Could I see myself as a head coach? I'm not sure. There's nothing better than a feeling of helping somebody to potentially fulfil their dreams. And in my feeling, you might be doing a one-to-one, you might be doing a group session, but if you just give them a little gold nugget that they go, actually, that really helps. You just get that little, that feeling of a debut, at Lords, where you get that little, the little hair stand up on your neck, and you think, actually, that was great. I loved that. Of course, it's the most natural thing to kind of go into, because it's what I've done for so long. Yeah. But I've got a huge passion for it. It won't necessarily mean I'll make a great coach, but I'd like to think I could, try and help a few people along the way, and I'll give it my best shot.
Well, I think if you're mantra on coaching is anything like it was, sort of trying to build yourself for different delivery in the middle of an ODI series, and also your keenness and fondness for the game. I think you'll be a brilliant coach, Graham.
It's barking mad, Anna, really.
You are, but in a great, great way. I love it. You channeled it in a great way. So, hey, mate, thanks so much for talking to us. We've had 45 minutes. And
thanks, lads.
It's been great. And yeah, echo everything that Brooksy said. It's, you know, had a fantastic career. And Chris, you know, Graham was fondly remembered amongst the Barmy Army. So, thanks so much, Graham. It's really
thanks
good of
so
you
much
to come
for coming on.
Yeah, can I just say, obviously, the Barmy Army are the best fans in the world, of course. They've helped me massively. I can't just say that just because you're here in front of me here, but all the England fans, of course, appreciate it massively. You spend so much money, time away from your family. Of course, you have a good time as well, but we do appreciate it. Cheers.
Brilliant. That's a really nice note, Graham. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to watch you for many years.
Yeah, thanks, lads. Top. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Top man. Cheers, Graham. Take it easy.
Cheers. Podcast Network.